we're ready to kick off this session. Today's speakers are John Halevich, Groundwater Protection Manager for Elkhart County, Indiana, where it's beautiful, 62 degrees. We're 30 miles east of where Notre Dame is going to welcome the Michigan Wolverines on Saturday, so go Irish. And after John, Ryan Dudley, our colleague and consultant from Symbiont, near Milwaukee, Wisconsin, we'll talk about the software he's developed to follow in our and inventory your brownfields. But before I turn it over to John, I'm going to reintroduce you to Deborah Orr, brownfield manager for EPA Region 5, and she'll give you the big picture for this initiative for the seven states in her region. Deborah.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to sort of frame today's seminar and what happened in the past and what we've been doing. You know, Region 5 is one of the leading regions when it comes to brownfields, and we take that honor very seriously. What we try and do is we try and figure out, you know, what are some of the cutting edge issues, you know, and use the experiences of our communities to help not only communities in the region, but across the nation. One of the things that I've been paying particular attention to is this whole concept of brownfields prevention. I'm sure many of you have noticed that terminology, that term, brownfields prevention, has dropped out of the guidelines this year. It's been replaced with a number of different terms, and you've heard these two: sustainable reuse, revitalization, sustainable redevelopment, but it all kind of boils down to land stewardship. At the Brownfields Conference, Bharat Mather, who's at that point the acting regional administrator, challenged the communities in Region 5 particularly, and all of the ones that were there, to identify ways or methodologies for how to really address brownfields prevention. You know, what are some of the things that could be done? And I have to admit, it wasn't his idea, it was mine. And that's because I knew that there were three really good examples of how that's being done in Region 5. We've heard from two of those example communities. We started over the last month following up on what we started at the conference. We've heard from all suburban mayors and managers. We've heard from Moline, and this is the last of the three fluent sessions where we're going to hopefully give communities and other entities that are participating an idea of what they could be doing. And our precepts are that municipalities can take really easy steps towards preventing brownfields by being proactive, and that's proactive in identifying and understanding what's going on in their community. They can help companies and other operating facilities be better partners, and that's the whole concept, is that prevention is a partnership, and that all of these activities will lead to benefits to the community. So what Bharat did was he challenged local governments to consider incorporating brownfields prevention into inspections, and that's the example that we're going to hear about today. By incorporating brownfields prevention into assessment, and that's the Moline concept that we heard. And then finally, brownfields prevention in your comprehensive plan. And that's what the South Suburban mayors and managers located here in Illinois kind of pioneered. So our desired result in Region 5 is that local governments would be exposed to ideas that will help them help manufacturers and commercial enterprises leave a cleaner footprint on their cities, their counties, and their villages, and that this can all be done by building on lessons learned from your peers. So we're here today to hear from one of them, and that's Elkhart County. So we hope that at the end of this, that you're willing to embrace an initiative and to ask for the dialogue and become a partner. And that's it, Lauren. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, now we're going to go right to John Halevich, who's in the same building as I am in Goshen, Indiana. And so, John, we're going to be starting on the slide that says managing your inventory for brownfield prevention with two quotes, or actually two people who said the following. We have it in our power to begin the world over again. We're going to call that slide one. I hope it's slide one for you. And then we'll go to slide two with John's title slide, his name and title. And then we're going to go now to slide three, which is consider building a brownfield prevention program by recycling. Thank you, John.
Good morning, everyone. As Laura stated earlier, we're going to be tag-teaming. I'm going to do the first portion of the presentation. And Ryan with Symbiont is going to work on the second portion. And let's go ahead and go to the next slide, which should be a slide that basically shows the front page of a document called the Groundwater Protection Ordinance. Initially, Elkhart County didn't start out looking to create a brownfields program, but it did start out looking at a variety of problems with drinking water and groundwater contamination. To give you a little bit of a lay of the land, Elkhart County isn't that different from a lot of your communities probably here in the Midwest, in that we've had historical industries that have had some environmental problems. Here in Elkhart County, we are blessed with a variety of industries, but a lot of them started out with band instruments or RV backgrounds. Those still predominate, but we also have some historical foundries and metalworks. And we even at one time were home to Miles Labs, which became Bayer, home of Alka-Seltzer. So there's been some variety here. We currently have about 200,000 individuals residing in Elkhart County, and our communities tend to have more of an influx on a daily basis of people coming from other counties to work here. So certainly it's a fairly industrious and prosperous area, but not without problems. Let's go ahead and go to the next slide, which should be titled the Groundwater Protection Ordinance of Elkhart County. And years ago, back in the 80s, Elkhart County unfortunately started to have a number of sites that popped up on the radar for significant groundwater contamination. Go ahead and go to the next slide. Because of that, one of the things they looked at was formulating a game plan on how to attack the problem. You should have right now in front of you a slide that says Groundwater Protection Ordinance of Elkhart County and a variety of dates. As you see, it took a number of years to go through the entire process. Now, the Groundwater Advisory Committee and the Technical Review Committee were basically made up of individuals that saw a need to provide more control than what currently existed within state and federal regulations when it came to being preventative for future groundwater contamination episodes. Not really brownfields, but in a sense, the start of brownfields back then. There was a lot of give and take when they looked at developing an ordinance. And the ordinance ended up excluding such things as residential sites and agricultural sites and focused primarily on industry as a whole. There were numerous attempts at trying to understand what was out there and what might be causing the problems. A lot of surveys were done in the initial years that led to some ideas, and those ideas were then formulated into an ordinance. Numerous drafts of that ordinance were released, and finally the ordinance was adopted May 1st, 1989. At that time, a very unique tool, one of a handful in existence across the nation on a local level. Next slide, please. as I said, the primary purpose of the ordinance was to prevent groundwater contamination. In Elkhart County, 100% of our drinking water is obtained through groundwater sources. In addition to that, approximately 50% of our population is served by private water wells. They are not wells that are regularly tested, nor do they have any real oversight. So those wells were the ones that were certainly most susceptible. Here in Elkhart County, we have our sole source aquifer, and you can generally hit groundwater anywhere from 10 to 12 feet down in most areas. Very sandy soils, high water table, very abundant source of water. So the purpose initially was to look at preventing further contamination. It was also to look at mechanisms that we could utilize to help see where those chemicals were stored within our communities and how they were being utilized, and then to support and supplement some of the existing state and federal codes. Let's go ahead and go to the next slide that talks about the inspection process.
Excuse me, what slide is that? What number?
Well, it is slide 14, but I understand we're about six off, so it might
be slide 8.
Slide 8.
Okay, thank you.
I evidently have a skewed copy of this. But regardless, certainly if you have any questions, go ahead, and if you're not on the same page, I want to make sure you're there. The ordinance itself basically gave us the authority to start doing inspections. And as you scroll through this, you'll see that it helped us determine, you know, what types of materials were on hand. We currently still focus on toxic and hazardous materials, but over the last nearly 20 years, we'll be going through our fourth rewrite of this ordinance. It has a 5-year sunset. We've also expanded to look at spills of other types of issues that might be deleterious or objectionable. It focuses also on on-site wastewater systems. What you will find in Elkhart County is, unfortunately, the planning process many, many years ago didn't prevent industry from building in the unincorporated areas that were not sewered. In essence, what we found is that a number of these businesses have been in existence for 20, 30, 40 years in unsewered communities and had no real method of wastewater disposal other than using septic systems or dry wells. We'll go ahead and go to the next slide, which says the inspection process scope continued. Should be slide 9 for you. Again, some of the things that we were looking at during our inspection process, and one of the things that was kind of interesting as you click through is point number 3, the testing of wastewater systems. These actually apply to the on-site wastewater systems, those septics and dry wells, because it was a common belief that these might be a principal source of groundwater contamination. And over the years, what we have found is that 80% of all septic systems contain toluene, a very common component. We further then did some testing of residential systems, and lo and behold, we found 80% of the residential systems we tested contained toluene in similar types of concentrations. The ordinance itself required that annually. We now only require it upon the initial startup of a business that might be on a wastewater system or new occupancy, because what we found is that really didn't hold true. Industry was not using the wastewater systems, the dry wells, the septic systems, whatever they might have there, to be a source of pollution. As we scroll through the scope continued, you'll see we also have some requirements for spill reporting and cleanup, which have been expanded. And what we've evolved to is from strictly an enforcement tool into point 5. My staff currently goes through training with the state to try to have a good basis of understanding for other state enforced rules. that the county does not enforce, such as hazardous waste under RCRA, maybe a NPDES permit for discharging waters to the state, or air permitting, along with things such as solid waste and anything else that the industry might ask. What we do is not enforce those rules, but we go to those industries and offer comment that you may be in violation of state or federal statute because of what we've seen here. Here's a person to contact within pollution prevention and technical assistance who can guide you along the right path, because if a state or federal inspector comes in, they will be not quite so lenient. They will not be kind enough to say, well, gosh, you're in violation, but I'm not going to write anything up. I'll just let you go away. That doesn't happen. So it's been very unique in that we've been able to go from strictly enforcement into conducting a helpful audit to these industries and actually periodically get calls from industries and say, hey, you haven't been here in a year or two. Would you come back through? So that's turned into a pretty good tool. One of the other byproducts is that we actually established in 1990 an on-call team that we are available 24 hours a day to assist with spills, spill cleanup, and documentation. While we do not perform the cleanup, we certainly help the scientific end as far as making certain they're getting the proper contractors and doing the right things. So that's been kind of unique. You know, it's been unique, one, that I've been here for 18 years. So it's not often that somebody that grew up in the area, knows the lay of the land, and has been involved this long gets to see a program evolve. Your next slide, please. Again, just talks a little bit about some of the extra steps we take in trying to make this unique. And as you cycle through that, you'll see the points that I was trying to make along the auditing line. Next slide should be titled Chronology of Data Management. One of the things that's occurred, and if you pull up the points, you should have a number of bulletins here, including things such as incident and historic paperwork, inspections, R-based, is over 18 years of doing this ordinance, we have come up with all kinds of paperwork. The paperwork was overwhelming. I never intended for this to become a brownfields inventory or a way of organizing it, but the folks down the other end of the hall had bigger visions, and they recognized that there were opportunities in brownfields, that there were ways that Elkhart County could be utilizing the tools out there and also the resources that were kind of hidden. We have, for years, hoarded paperwork as all government seems to. And the worst part about it is we didn't have information only in the paper form, but we also had it in an archaic system called RBase, which I kind of liked at the time, but we had to grow away from. So we started using Access as a simple database, and we even have two different versions of that that we have utilized. So as you can see, we had historical information that may have been things such as complaints, spills, notice of violations, paperwork from the federal or state government like permits, to anything else that ever wandered in the door and got stuck in a file. And at that point, with the realization that we had no way of really knowing what was on hand. If we go to the next file, you can get pretty much a synopsis of what data management meant for the Elkhart County Health Department and our groundwater protection program. It was an oxymoron. We did not really have a grasp. As you cycle through, you'll see we had over 5,100 different files. Now, those were sites. Some of those were sites that we may have had four or five industries in over time. We also basically kept everything by name. We had no way to tie it in by address other than those partial databases. So we would periodically have to refer to the old RBase system for files that existed there, but not in Access, because we didn't have any continuity between one database system to the other. We also had to look at properties that may have been wrongly addressed or may have been shared and then were split up. We had essentially piecemeal property histories. We didn't have just that fluid, desirable data management or even any kind of GIS potential. And to make things worse, when somebody came in and asked for information, we really had to spend a lot of time to try to pull it together. And for those of you that may work with environmental consultants out there, we have a number of consultants that come in just for phase one information, probably average somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 a month. So it got to be pretty labor-intensive, and we were finding ourselves just spending time looking up files. And that was not the desired outcome. We wanted to be out in the field working with our community. So we really just struggled. And a lot of the stuff that people came to ask for, I've been here 18 years, was in my head. And that's not a good place for information, because I'm not here every day, and some days my head doesn't work as good as others. So with that, we decided that we needed to look at something that would become a lot better. And at that time, we also had the opportunity present itself that, you know, brownfields were really being pushed, and that we needed to have a dynamic inventory. You should be on a slide now that says our data management was an inefficient, ineffective, and time-consuming. And that, for me, is slide 19, which I believe for you folks is slide 13. Is that correct?
That's correct, John.
All right. So if we cycle to the next slide, which is chronology of data management continued, some other things were transpiring in the county. The planning and development folks were looking at trying to create a new comprehensive plan, which I think a number of years ago that would have been an oxymoron, because we weren't really utilizing planning to the best of our ability. And as you cycle through that slide, you'll see some of the things I was talking about, where we were actually experiencing a ton of growth in areas that were unwatered and unsewered, and we were letting it happen. Elkhart County and the communities within were not pursuing the most reasonable paths. We were giving up green space. We were giving up farmland because it was a premium for some of these people to utilize this cheaper alternative rather than being within an incorporated, you know, community and getting on sewer water. It was cheaper for them to go out and buy large blocks of farmland and utilize it for industrial growth. We had a number of industrial subdivisions pop up that really shouldn't have been there. So we need to, as you cycle through this, look at better regard to what was out there, and then also try to sell this as an economic opportunity, that we were leaving behind perfectly good spaces. And in their wake, what we were creating was further problems by going into areas unsewered and unwatered. Next slide. Basically sums it up for us. We needed a drastic change in Elkhart County. And fortunately, we had some visionaries here that said, let's take some of the things that we've got that are problems. Let's put a twist on them. Let's utilize the information that's available to us. Let's try to pull it together with one system of data management. Let's try to put it into GIS so we have a way of incorporating all the information, ranking and prioritizing, and presenting to the community and to people interested what we want to see happen in the near future. Next slide. Brings us to the guy who is supposed to put this all together, And actually, Ryan has done a wonderful job, and I am thrilled to have this opportunity for him to present where we're at.
Thanks, John. If we can move on to slide 17. In 2006, Elkhart County applied for and was awarded its first two U.S. EPA countywide site assessment grants. This grant opportunity provided Elkhart with the necessary funding to develop a comprehensive data management solution and really build upon efforts to prevent future brownfields. I'm going to give you an overview of the data management solution that the county selected and also demonstrate some of the software tools and capabilities that were developed. The objective is that you can take ideas from Elkhart County's approach while developing your own site inventory. Next slide. Should be slide 18. In its grant application, the county proposed to use a unique approach to complete the site inventory and prioritization task. Really, the goal was to utilize existing information, including the county's groundwater protection records, as the foundation of an inventory database, and also develop a sophisticated application to help query, manage, and facilitate the redevelopment of brownfields within the county. Moving on to slide 19. In reality, the groundwater inspection program had been developing an inventory and preventing potential brownfields through the county for the past 18 years. Its records contain property information for facilities involved with hazardous materials, which is a key factor in assessing brownfield sites, and among them, records are the most contaminated or neglected. With over 5,100 sites in the program and nearly 30% transition to new ownership each year, the benefit to using these records to create a site inventory was realized. Unlike many grantees who have to create an inventory from scratch, Elkhart was fortunate and had a head start in creating its inventory. Moving on to slide 20. Now I would like to provide you with a brief overview of what steps were taken and what we would recommend for other entities trying to build their site inventory. In order to effectively utilize the groundwater inspection program records as a basis for inventory and prioritization, the county faced a few challenges. As mentioned previously, over the last 18 years, the county had accumulated over 44 file drawers of paper-based records, which contained important historic information for each facility. As John mentioned, access to the paper records was cumbersome and labor-intensive, one of the reasons being they were cataloged by facility name only. So retrieving the history of a site location was very difficult in its current format. The first solution was to scan all of the documents into an enterprise document management system. A document management system is a computer system which is used to track and store electronic documents and or images of paper documents. A document management system provided quick, easy access to all the inspection records using a computer. The health department selected Laserfiche, which is an enterprise-level document management solution, based on its capabilities and, at the time, was being used in other departments. In addition, the cost savings of upgrading to a newer version of Laserfiche versus purchasing a new system was significant. We also determined that utilizing a web-based module would allow additional flexibility, including browser-based access to documents, and would simplify integration with other proposed application systems. When implementing a paperless system, an index structure infrastructure needs to be created for cataloging the records. Depending on the complexity of how you choose to index, this will greatly increase the cost of conversion. For simplicity and to stay within our budget, the groundwater inspection program records were indexed by facility name and address only. As an example, in the future, records could also be indexed by document type, such as inspection versus correspondence, etc. During scanning, all the records were digitized with optical character recognition, which converts images of words into searchable text. I will demonstrate later why this is important. Prior to the assessment grant, spatial analysis of the facilities was really non-existent. There was no existing GIS layer that represented the location of these facilities throughout the county. Therefore, access to information in an area was still difficult. We found that sometimes street addresses at a known location may have changed over time. Fortunately, Elkhart County had an existing GIS that contained parcel layers and address attribute information that could be utilized to help map the location of all 5,100 facilities. In addition, base map layers could be utilized for a GIS system. Over the years, the groundwater inspection program had created an inventory of sites and facility name and addresses in access tables, which saved us a lot of time prior to mapping. After normalizing all of the facility records, we created a GIS layer by geocoding every site in the program. At this point in the project, the GIS and the document management system information was not fully integrated, and it was essential that these systems were connected into one application. Therefore, we proposed to develop a custom web-based software application that would integrate the GIS data sets and the document management system and also provide a long-term software architecture for future GIS-related projects. Elkhart County had existing GIS software but was only licensed for ESRI's desktop products. Since we knew the application needed to be web-based for accessibility and also to provide a server-based integration with other software applications, the application framework was built using ESRI's ArcGIS Server 9.2, which is an industry leader for developing web-based mapping applications. The application was named eAtlas. Moving on to slide 21. In Indiana and many other states, there are numerous external location-based environmental data sources, which are really important when determining potential impacts to a site, such as EPA facilities, Indiana State UST databases, and in any other governmental database or GIS layers. Our goal was to include those data sets into eAtlas for one-point access. In addition, Elkhart had been promoting to other entities in the county, such as the City of Elkhart and Goshen, both U.S. EPA site assessment grant recipients, to provide the county with their completed site assessments, which could also be accessible through eAtlas. And really, the goal was to encourage these entities to view eAtlas as their inventory. These types of applications require lots of processing and storage. So if there's other communities out there, we would recommend evaluating, you know, your existing hardware prior to developing this type of application. Elkhart decided to purchase a new server to run eAtlas. And lastly, ongoing management of such a system is really important, and we recommend developing procedures and policies for ongoing integration and updates to the data. Moving on to the next slide, slide 22. Prior to development of eAtlas, Elkhart County defined some essential system requirements. The system needed to be scalable and flexible. What does that mean? It needed the capacity to expand over time and also allow various functions. It also needed to be easily accessible and integrated, which means really the ability to connect to other databases and for end users to really to access simply by using a web browser. It also needed to be capable of performing a variety of queries to retrieve and access site information, such as searching by keywords or attributes contained in the GIS layers, and also be capable of searching based on location or through the map interface. Lastly, the tool needed to have the ability to both rank and prioritize the sites for assessment and potential redevelopment, such as looking at utilization factors, whether the site is vacant or occupied, and also other known environmental status, whether it has known or perceived contamination at the site. Moving on to slide 23. I'm going to later on demonstrate eAtlas using a few screenshots, but I would first like to take this opportunity to kind of talk about some potential future enhancements that have been identified by the county. Some of these include incorporating Sanborn map data, integrating with tax information, including spill information that's not directly associated with industrial facilities, which would impact the assessment of sites, such as transportation and farming spills, and also to include additional planning and zoning overlays. Slide 24. Another enhancement currently in the works is the ability to perform groundwater protection inspections using a web-based software system. Currently, the county is evaluating an enterprise paperless inspection application, which would allow inspectors to maintain the data set without adding additional documents to the document management system, and in the future would also be linked to eAtlas. Slide 25. Another future enhancement is to create external users. Currently, the system is only available at the county, but was designed to be deployed over the Internet. The county has discussed options for generating additional revenue to defray the ongoing costs and maintenance, potentially by providing subscriptions to parties interested in accessing the information. Moving on to slide 26. Another potential enhancement is to utilize really what we've done with eAtlas as a basis for other projects. Recently, Elkhart County was awarded a grant from the Center of Disease Control where they have proposed to develop a GIS-based website designed to educate the public about potential health impacts from brownfields. It's being called WIMBY, or What's in My Backyard, and is expected to be developed over the next year. Moving on to slide 27. On this slide, we've added some links to there is a live demonstration of eAtlas that was prepared for the talks at the National Brownfield Conference, which is a short movie that will help people get a better understanding of what it does and its functionality. And second, there's a link here to the groundwater protection ordinance document. Slide 28. I'd like to take this opportunity to demonstrate kind of the look and feel and functionality of eAtlas by viewing a series of screen captures. As you can see, eAtlas offers a map-based interface for interacting and viewing the available data. Shown above in the map are the over 5,100 groundwater protection sites located in Alpharetta County that serve as the basis for the county's inventory. When a new site is registered in the groundwater inspection program, it is also added to eAtlas. Moving on to slide 29. Similar to other mapping applications, eAtlas users have access to other relevant GIS layers such as parcel boundaries, streets, waterways, zoning, digital orthophotos, and many other relevant GIS layers. This greatly enhances the user's ability to not only visualize, but enables spatial analysis of features and simple access to feature attribute information. eAtlas includes standard GIS mapping tools such as zooming, panning, selection, and identification of features. After a site is selected via the map using either a query, users can view information on that site's history, view current prioritization score, or access numerous other tools, which I'll discuss in the next few slides. Moving on to slide 30. With over 5,100 sites in the inventory, there needed to be tools developed which allowed users to easily locate or query for site in a variety of ways. Therefore, both map-based and attribute-based query tools were created to meet this requirement. In eAtlas, users can easily locate sites by entering a facility name, entering a known address or street, or if needed, can define a custom query to retrieve sites. Illustrated above is a query which allows users to select sites based on a buffer distance, which is an example of a map-based query. Moving on to slide 31. Here is an example of a user-defined query. In this instance, sites are being selected based on their current utilization status and their assigned overall environmental risk score. The sites that meet that criteria are illustrated in blue. Using tools like these enables users to ask questions of the data formerly not possible. Moving on to slide 32. For every site in the system, users have access to all of Elkhart County Groundwater Protection Program's scanned records using the Link Document Management System. After a site is identified on the map, users have the ability to view related documents. This will open the document relevant to that site in a web-based document management system module. eAtlas currently maintains over 180,000 pages of historic site information, and new records are being created and updated daily. Moving on to the next slide. As I mentioned earlier, hard copy documents were digitized using optical character recognition. In LaserFiche, users can query documents by keywords. And in the query shown here, it located 10 instances of the keyword spill in this document. This enables users quick access to those occurrences in the document. Moving on to slide 34. eAtlas features can also be hyperlinked to external online data sets. Currently, users have access to online records for each EPA facility in the database, and we're also working towards integrating eAtlas with other online resources such as IDEM's online virtual file cabinet. To briefly summarize the project, the approach that Elkhart County took in creating their inventory, I believe created many benefits besides helping them manage their site inventory. And just to mention a few of the benefits, it really increased the efficiencies in the way, the workflow with the groundwater inspection program. And it gives them a platform to build upon. Currently, the public has access to aspects of the system, which greatly reduces the time frame for record retrieval and how time is spent by the groundwater protection staff. It also provided an infrastructure for the GIS department for future GIS projects. The county is currently considering hosting their own web-based map using the ArcGIS server application. And lastly, it also provides a model by which other communities can develop their inventory. And moving on to the last slide, and which I believe is our contact information, Laura.
Yes, thank you. And we do have a few questions that have been emailed in, and so I think I'll start with one for John. It's we don't have a groundwater database to use as the core of our brownfield inventory. What else can I go to get a head start on identifying brownfields in our community and getting a list going?
I think that's a fantastic question. Depending on what state you're from, there is tons of information on the state level that applies to your community. Here in Indiana, they've actually created a virtual file room where you can look at documents specific to your county. For instance, we have a link to that virtual file room in eAtlas that allows us to look at the documents the state has that we might not. That certainly is one potential. You can also get historical information from other sources. Oftentimes, fire departments or building departments will have historical documentation on things such as underground storage tanks or leaking underground storage tanks that they may be able to share with you. The Sanborn maps are available for every community, pretty much, that gives you a perspective of what happened 40, 50, 60 years ago. Work with your health department. Most health departments, though they may not focus the same as we have here in Elkhart County by looking at some of these things, we'll still have information in the forms of complaints or investigations on properties. The U.S. EPA maintains a number of online databases. Your local realtors know what's going on. They'll have some information for you on properties. Whether, you know, they want to share or not may be something you have to do a little prying, but if you develop a relationship with some of those commercial realtors, they're going to have a pulse or a touch on sites that might be carrying a stigma. Soil water conservation districts may have information on what's going on. There are some SWCDs that have had ongoing programs in groundwater testing that might lend information. Heck, you could try Googling it. You might get information. Just some ideas.
Okay, that's great. All right, and just to give equal time, I've got one for Ryan. What would we need to do to get a copy of the software, the eAtlas software, and who would we work with to customize it for us? I think that's a generic question. What kind of person would do that? And is this compatible with other data management systems? And they say, I can also call you later and learn more.
To get a copy, I'm not sure, you know, as far as getting a copy, it was developed under this grant, and I'm at this point, I'm not, you know, as far as the rights, as far as compatibility with other document management systems, yes, it is completely compatible. Actually, the county, since the beginning of this project, the county has made a county-wide kind of decision to migrate from Laserfiche to a different document management system. So it's really just really defining, you know, what those calls are, and it can be customized to work with any document management system. And yeah, I would say probably, you know, if you're interested in learning more about the application and how it could apply to your community, you should just contact me directly.
Okay, great. All right, let's see. From Milwaukee, not too far from you, Ryan, what criteria were used to determine, oh, it skipped out on me, just a minute, to determine the environmental ranking of the sites? Is the ranking qualitative or quantitative? And I can answer some of that, but one of you want to take that? The scoring system.
I think the scoring was a melding of ideas, but part of the basis for the scoring lied in the information that was currently in the groundwater data sets. One of the things that we do when we do our inspection is even if a facility is not occupied, we still enter that information. So we have a running total of vacant facilities. So it's always easier to look at vacant land or vacant buildings to help ascertain maybe a higher potential for a brownfield because now there's an opportunity waiting to happen. And we also had a numerical value that we placed on the sites we inspected. And it was kind of a risk category, a 1, a 2, or a 3. And a 1 was one that needed to be inspected maybe on an annual frequency, and generally it was due to the fact that when we did our inspections, we found violations of the Groundwater Protection Ordinance, or we had other concerns that warranted more frequent inspection. So right there was a little value added to our ranking that allowed us to use the inspection process and the numerical value that we assigned as a risk category and then the occupancy or the vacancy of a site.
Okay, I actually pulled up the score sheet, and I'll be glad to send that to anybody who requests it. My email is on the... I think it's on the front page, but if not, I'll try to answer it as a question. There are a number of questions. For example, is petroleum contamination suspected? And there are points given for that, whether it's yes or no. And then the status of the property with, you know, federal or state, and then it also talks about blight factors, achievability factors, access, can you get access to the site? And then finally, community support and economic development factors, you know, the potential for this to be a great location for X, something like that. So I'll be able to send that to anybody. Ryan, did you want to say anything about the scoring and maybe how that gets...
I think you did a good job.
Okay. The problem can be that this, you know, some of these are pretty subjective and qualitative, so and we're okay with that. I think we're not going to be too hard and fast with that. What this does more than anything else is confirm your suspicions or maybe take it out of the running by looking at things that really are deal breakers. So... All right, we have another question from Beth. She wants to know, how did you pay for this and how much did the various pieces cost?
Well, the great thing about this, Beth, is the majority of the costs have been incurred because we were fortunate enough to obtain one of those grants that our federal government so generously offers periodically. And Laura had a lot to do with that along with some other individuals. And then the time involved, you know, to do those types of things, certainly on the county level, are just part of the job. So we've had county commissioners that have been supportive of the project, and some of the things that couldn't be paid for by grant monies, they have found ways to, you know, upgrade software or hardware, excuse me, and do those types of things. But beyond that, it's been a federal grant.
And to be even more specific, the EPA grant was the Petroleum and Hazardous Chemical Assessment Grant, and this is the part of the grant under the inventory task is what's paid for that. We went ahead then and used the other budgeted funding for phase ones, phase twos, and outreach. Okay, that's it for questions that I have seen come in over emailed. Would anybody like to ask either Deborah or Ryan or John a question directly on the phone by unmuting your phone? Okay. Well, you can contact us later and download anything supplemental to this topic from the website, and I really want to thank Ryan for doing what he's been doing for us, but also for giving this presentation, and of course John for really his leadership in this, and then Deborah, thank you for being our mentor and cheerleader.
Actually, there's a question here in my office.
Oh, great.
The question is, is a comprehensive plan required by the state of Indiana? And the second question is brownfields in your comprehensive plan?
I can answer yes to both of those. A comprehensive plan is required for you to have a zoning ordinance and a subdivision control ordinance, and it's derivative from that. And in our comprehensive plan, which is on the county's website, we talk a lot about brownfields, and well, I won't say a lot because it's not a very big plan. It's a performance-based plan, but yes, indeed. We updated it 2 years ago, and brownfields are right in there.
Thank you.
Sure.
Before we sign off, I'd also like to put 2 cents in on the WIMBY project, which, you know, I attended the Brownfields Conference, and if nothing else, I came away with it with the opportunity to apply for CDC money. There was a small pool of money, $300,000 out there, with a max award of $70,000 that was only available to state entities or territories or tribal governments. And fortunately, the state of Indiana signed off and said I could apply for the grant on a local level, and we were awarded $70,000 to do WIMBY, which will give us an opportunity to try to pull the public health component into it rather than strictly looking at environmental ramifications and economic development, because we need to start tying those types of things into these sites. So hopefully we'll see another product arise out of this brownfield opportunity in Elkhart County, and keep posted, because maybe in a year there'll be even better things.
I think we actually have talked about tying in our, now remember these are per property, they're property records, so nuisance database, zoning, other kinds of files that give a complete picture of what's happened and what's going on a certain piece of property, so everything you want to know about that particular parcel. I also want to give a plug for the sustainability initiative that Deborah has described at the beginning of this hour and a half. It's just been a real energizing challenge that she's issued to Elkhart County and to every single one of the communities represented, and I think if you take it and wrap your arms around it and personalize it and champion it in your community, you're going to only be further ahead in terms of the sustainability of your community. So thank you, Deborah. Okay, well, I guess we're going to end this on an up note, and thank you, everybody, for participating. Have a great day.